Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Saying we should leave it here.
Oh, no. It's too powerful for one person or one culture to access or control. I think we need to let it go.
Are you going to start the clock?
I'm going to start the clock as soon as I think it's appropriate. Do you think I should start the clock?
Only if you want.
All right. Dan says he thinks I should start the podcast.
So. Only if you want to. I said if you want to.
And I do.
So that means I do.
Thank you, Dan. all right. Hello. Hi,
hello.
Everybody.
Hello.
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 Good evening.
Hello.
Hello and good evening.
I request an audience.
We know that it's not necessarily evening for everybody listening to the program because it is a podcast. And one of
we pose no threat.
One of the virtues to the podcasting format is indeed its on-demand nature. Whether you're streaming or download, you can listen to it at any given
people
time.
People demand that shit, man. They just demand.
You don't
really amazing.
You don't have to time it together with your buddies to listen at the same time, though you are, of course, welcome
demand
to.
Demand a podcast.
Again, it is the flexibility of the podcast format that is what makes it an attractive form of creativity. What do you think about that, Dan?
I'm glad I could help.
All right, good. Well, what I should say,
was there not to be excited about?
I've welcomed you, but I haven't specified to what you are being welcome.
I think they can get I think they can figure it out. I think
they might already know. Yeah.
Yeah, they probably know what they're listening to.
Yeah, but you know,
you never know.
I mean, I think you guys are trying to get me to not say the name.
You think
of the
someone's going to stumble upon some like a nameless file somewhere and like just play it on their computer? And yeah. Like, what is this? I'm listening to.
They haven't done an identification yet.
You've never heard of digital archaeology?
Digital decay and digital
archaeology.
I think it's like digital forensics.
Yes, but there is there's the seed vault. You know about the seed vault, right? They have a few of them. There's a few seed vaults up in the north.
Patrick, you're my seed vault.
Okay, all right. It's going to be a good one tonight, folks.
Seed vault.
No, you know the seed vaults were to protect against the cataclysmic stuff. They put the seeds in the vault. They have a similar thing for podcasts. So at any point in the future, mm-hmm. This podcast, any podcast you can imagine that exists out there, is going to be stored in the podcast vault and be accessible and reviewable by future audiences.
I heard.
All right. Yes. Well, we are welcoming you at long last to mm-hmm. the It's Got Star Trek podcast. That's you what you're listening to.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Well, okay. It is episode 100. No.
Oh, no.
200.
Oh, no.
242.
Oh, man.
It is the 242nd episode. That's another way.
Oh, no.
So it's another way about saying the exact same thing.
Oh, no.
Episode 242.
No. Absolutely not.
242.
You are insane.
That's how many podcast episodes we have done.
Black Alert.
Thus far.
Black Alert.
Not counting bonus and Patreon episodes.
Holy shit.
Patreon, you say?
It's a different numbering system.
Speaking of Patreon, whoever brought up Patreon, it is a reminder. a reminder for us to remind our loyal audience that yes, we do have a Patreon with a ton of bonus content.
You do.
Adding more there all the time. Patreon.com/itscottstartrek if you want to check it out. If you
don't time know. To switch from defense to offense.
You're really going through like the whole. I know this was an extra long episode, mm-hmm. but Dan's got an extra thick library of audio.
I think
clips
I'm just not going to talk. I'll talk through the soundboard tonight.
That'll be fun. All right.
No. Absolutely yeah. not.
So, yes. Well, the other thing we've mentioned the number we've mentioned the name of the podcast. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned the number of the podcast. We've mentioned the concept of a podcast vault.
Oh, good.
What we have not mentioned
podcast
is
dumpster.
The name of the episode that we will be discussing tonight.
No.
And yes. Yes, and the name of that episode is Life.
Life itself.
Yes, thank you, Dan. Life, comma, itself. The series finale to Star Trek Discovery.
Life itself is meaning enough.
Yeah, so we will be discussing that tonight. That's what we're going to be doing in this episode. But
I heard.
But first. But first, get a good education. No, but first, that's a what's
James
his name?
Brown.
James Brown.
Okay.
That old sound clip that the radio duo Don and Mike used to play, a nationally syndicated radio duo. They used to play a tape of James Brown providing a public service announcement where he suggested that kids go join the rest of their friends and go back to school.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Really amazing.
All right, getting back on track here. Yes, so we are discussing Life itself eventually.
What? He also played, they played clips of Larry King and Charles Barkley, all sorts of people.
Yeah, it seems like there was a lot of Larry King.
Yeah, Larry King farting, that was a good one. Larry King being tired. And,
my hair grows.
And getting confused. Somebody asks him about journalism and he thinks he's talking about medical school. That's a great clip.
I was watching on Hulu, there was a thing about...
Your boy's tired.
It was called like The Dark Side of the Millennium or something, one of those shows. But there wasn't really too much of a dark side. It was just kind of scandalous or controversial or just things you remember. Anyways,
do they mean the turn of the millennium?
I think they meant the turn of the millennium.
So because depending on who you talk to, either 2000 or 2001.
Well, exactly right. Yeah,
I'm a 2001 guy.
Okay, I say due to
math.
Yeah, but you know whatever
but
gets
psychologically but yes 2000
whatever
is
gets
pretty
the,
rad.
But whatever gets the
I
ma-
use a different calendar.
But whatever gets
yeah,
the,
I know you're still, are you still on the Julian calendar?
Look, I'm into math. I'm into math, but I'm into whatever gets the message across the easiest. That it's easiest for us to agree on. That's all I care about.
All right.
For that. Anyways, but they were talking about like the, and this feels more of a 90s thing. Maybe it was the 90s when I was watching. I don't know.
Certainly doesn't seem like a Star Trek thing.
But they were talking about disc jock. They were talking about the rise of the shock jock. You know,
ah,
they
yes,
brought Howard
yes.
Stern. They even showed a short clip of, what's his
Grease
name?
Grease Man?
Yeah, what's his name?
Hobbledy Gaga?
Doug Track. Doug Track. Mike Source is Don.
Mike Source is Don Geronimo.
Doug Track. Yeah, they showed him,
Mike
and then
Source.
They showed like.
I love, we have an international audience and a very small proportion of those people are super excited to hear what we're talking about.
My point is actually quite short. They even show Man Cow, but they do not show.
Do they have Buzz Burbank?
Let me finish my sentence.
All right, sorry. I retract my previous statement. Stricken from
because
the
if you had just waited a few more seconds, you would have had the answer to your question. They did not show anything from Don and Mike.
At all. So no Mike Elston / Buzz Burbank.
They showed no
Rob A. Speedway.
No, they showed Doug Tracht of all people and
Hobbledy Gaga
and Man Cow, who I guess was popular, but like no Don and Mike.
All right. Well.
But you brought up Don and Mike, so I was just saying. The message I was trying to get across is you brought up Don and Mike, and I was thinking, huh, not a lot of people probably heard of Don and Mike, yeah. Even though you'd think they were syndicated for
they
a while.
They ought to. What's that website you can go to? Is it like Paint Your Bald Spot? Paintyourbaldspot.com. It is.
Inconclusive readings.
I think that's what it's called. If you want to go listen to old Don and Mike recordings, somebody has collected a number of them together on, I believe it's paintyourbaldspot.com or some variation of that. So
maybe.
All right. That's been the late 90s shock jock DJ section of the...
I'm glad I could help.
Of the Yes, the It's Got Star Trek podcast. So
isn't there an email or something?
Yes. Thank you, Jesse.
In our inbox.
We have a couple of emails.
We got a couple of emails.
We have a couple of emails and one voicemail. So first,
both
the emails,
both
the emails reference our discussion about heists, about Star Trek heists, which was what we were discussing last week, because last week's episode, LaGrange Point, directed by Jonathan Frakes. Jonathan Frakes.
You
was
said
in,
Jonathan.
Yeah, Jonathan Frakes.
You said Jonathan.
Two takes Frakes?
No.
we were talking about how it had the structure of a heist movie or one of those heist stories, and we were sort of discussing about how
they said it was light heist.
Yeah, it's not Ocean's 11, but it was kind of like leaning into that. And so we were discussing some other Star Trek episodes that also had a similar heist feel. For that full discussion, go listen to last week's episode. But we did have a couple emails about that.
Set a course for the plasma.
First, Steve writes, gentlemen, you were recently discussing heist episodes, and I got to wondering if we should consider the Enterprise incident one. True, it is also an act of espionage, and they do not lay out a plan for the audience beforehand and then show how it's executed and then review it. But the goal is to steal something, and then the plot is revealed afterwards. He said, I'm not sure government sanction changes the basic heist element, but maybe I'm neglecting something. Thanks for the episode, Steve. And Dan, I think you were the one who
mentioned...
Yeah, I think you mentioned something about like when is the government doing it? It doesn't feel like a heist.
Right. So what that started with my point that like if you see some people walking around and they're all like talking into their cuff or like their sleeve or something, if it's not a government agent, then it's a heist situation.
Yeah.
If a government agent happens to be doing that tells me that it's some kind of like other kind of spy situation or something like that. The difference between a spy movie and a heist.
And it's also like last week's episode.
One of the many differences.
Last week's episode had, it seemed very overt references to that sort of heist style movie a la Ocean's 11, whereas the Enterprise incident didn't have that as much. It's tricky. It's kind of a vibe, the whole heist
tricky
thing.
tricky.
Indeed. All right, next email, a similar topic. Isaac from Unplanned Trek.
Woo!
Who have been taking great pains to try to teach us how to eat Vegemite properly. We have not yet learned how to do it quite to the satisfaction our friends.
I saw the picture you put up, and to me that looked like, I didn't think I put that much on there. I know the second time I put like too much on there, but the first time
that was the first time.
Wow, because like I remember the first time being like, wow, this just doesn't seem like...
No, the thing is looking at that picture, it still looks thin to me, but it is American thin, and I think that was the point that they were making, was that we are American, like when you say like barely put any on it, the American version of that is still this is a glob of bunch
on
there.
Like, that just solidifies like the fact that...
We're a gross culture.
Yeah, if it's not supersized, it's regular size. Mm.
All right, so Isaac says, "Hey, hi, Patrick, Jesse, and Uncle Dan. It's your favorite jam eater here.
I just wanted to say I just said something that didn't make a lot of sense. I said if it's not supersized, it's regular sized, and that's something that was supposed to indicate how much of an American I'm acting like.
I think it still works because it made sense to me in the moment.
Yeah, I know,
and I didn't question it until you've just pointed out that it's a completely nonsensical statement.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so
I think you know what I mean. Sorry.
Hi, Patrick, Jesse, and Uncle Dan.
Hi.
It's your favorite jam eater here, Isaac from Unplanned. And Trek.
Thank you.
I Googled fun, unusual, specific facts about Washington, D.C., which I guess applies to the three of you dinguses. Yes, the three of us were born and raised just outside of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan. Well, we're in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. So, yes, I think this counts for us. And he says, I hear you citizens really enjoy your wine and are missing J Street. What a bunch of jam or Vegemite munchers you are. Jam munchers. Yes, that is true. We have a lot of wineries in the area.
We have some in Virginia, too.
Yeah, Virginia has tons of wineries. Maryland has some. I don't know that D.C. proper has a winery, but there's plenty of wine consumed in Washington, D.C.
We have to be careful about saying we're from D.C. because people who are native D.C.
Yeah, we're not actually from
people
D.C.
Who are
I was born in D.C.
People who are native D.C. are always like, I'm native. Yeah. I'm really from D.C.
And
not one of these
It's a different.
It is different. Yeah. And I've never claimed to be from D.C., but it's so much simpler to explain to someone where you are in like Northern Virginia.
I would also argue it's a very DC thing to say you're from DC when you're from Maryland or Virginia.
Yeah, right.
It's, ironically, it's a DC thing to do.
Right, yeah.
Because we all work in DC. Most of us go into DC.
But it's
to
like,
work.
If you say Northern Virginia, all people might think, most people would probably just think Virginia. Yeah. And then people are like, why don't you have a Southern accent? And it's like, well, not everyone in Virginia does.
Why don't you have a Southern accent?
Not everyone in Southern Virginia. Somebody asked me that once. And yeah. I was thinking, like, I'm from Northern Virginia. And they're like, so? You know, so that meant nothing to them. It's more closer to DC than it is.
It is. And the J Street is an interesting, fun little fact that, yes, we have lettered streets in DC, lettered and numbered streets, but there is no J Street. Presumably, ostensibly, according to the history books, it's because in those days, the fonts for I and J, the font that was used, I and J were difficult to distinguish. And when you're on the road, speeding down the road in a horse-drawn carriage at about 5 miles per hour, you don't want to get those confused. And especially since they're close together,
they would have been right next
in the alphabet. So that's why we have.
I thought
no
it was because the mayor of the mayor of the time was named Jay McEldowney, and like he was like, "My name's Jay. So I don't want anyone. I don't want anyone to confuse my name.
Don't call me Jay.
I don't want anyone to confuse my name with the street name. So instead of making a J Street, even though he was spelled J A Y, they didn't want to make a J Street because there'd be confusion. They'd be like, just go down J Street, and then people would be like, what, you mean the mayor? That doesn't even make any sense. He's like, no, don't go down the person, go down the road. And so he was trying to prevent that whole misunderstanding. Right.
Now, folks,
I don't think so.
Folks, audience, I know that Dan just took up a good amount of time with that little anecdote. I'm going to have to take a little bit more time just to specify that there is no Mayor Jay Jumply Dunks.
Jay McEldowney.
Yeah, this whole anecdote that Dan just told is apocryphal, purposely so, meant to confuse and obfuscate.
No.
About the history of our local region.
No. Doesn't that guy usually have a voicemail?
And the roads,
Isaac. Sometimes he loses a voicemail.
Did you know the roads in DC are so confusing because they wanted to allow tanks to be able to ride through the city?
Okay, first of all, it's another apocryphal story that you've told incorrectly.
I think you've said that before.
You smashed together incorrect things. Anyway, please let's move on. Isaac goes on to say, last week you discussed Heist Trek. I wondered why you didn't include my second or third most hated episode of TNG, The Royale.
Mm.
I think the reason you didn't include it is, A, it's a very forgettable episode. B, if it was written better, it would have been a heist. C, I don't know what this episode is actually about.
And D, it didn't have any cheese. Royale didn't have any cheese.
Damn.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
It wasn't a Royale with cheese.
Yeah, I gotcha. It's a Pulp Fiction reference. They are common on this podcast.
Royale with cheese.
So Isaac goes on to note,
I don't know. I didn't go into Burger King.
Yeah. Okay. Any more? You need to get it out of your system? I watched you watch.
And even
because you are a character doesn't mean you have character.
It ain't even the same fucking sport.
Did you already say check out the Big Brain on Brett?
No, I have not.
Yeah, well, check out the Big Brain on Brett.
That's that Hawaiian joint.
Okay. Hawaiian burger joint. I noticed that you guys haven't done this episode yet. Maybe a way of moving along home from disco would be to do The Royale next time. What do you think? Should we do The Royale next week?
Sure.
Let's do that.
Why not?
I would kind of be into doing that episode.
We'll have to do it sometime.
Yeah. So for the folks who are newer to the podcast, who are mainly listening to our coverage of new episodes of New Discovery, when we are not covering new episodes, we'll use Dan's proprietary algorithm. He's developed this algorithm that ingests the previous week's podcast and then produces a list of Star Trek episodes in a priority order for us to select from to discuss on the following week's episode. However, I think
it's really something.
Let's skip the algorithm. Let's go with The Royale, and then we'll get back to Dan's algorithm after
skip
that.
Gorilla.
I think it'll be fun to get into some TNG and especially some sort of like silly early TNG. Mm-hmm. It'll be a good mood shift from Discovery.
For real.
Just to finish up Isaac's email, he says, you will all hate it, and there'll be some really good snippets for Danny Long clips to steal and claim as your own.
I won't
tell Paramount.
I don't hate that one that much.
I've enjoyed your stroll through season 5 of Disco. All the best for what comes next on It's Got Star Trek.
All right.
All righty. Thank you, Isaac.
Thank you.
Okay, and finally, we have a voicemail from Jesse at Open Pike Night.
Hello.
Hello, It's Got Star Trek. It's me again. Your biggest fan in the world, by far, no contest, Jesse from Open Pike Night.
Thank you.
And I'm going to keep this quick because I am really excited to hear what you guys have to say about the Discovery series finale.
Uh-oh.
But I have to know, as somebody who's listened to every single one of your episodes, many of them more than once, where does
Star Trek 57 M23 take two
come from? Is that a behind the scenes thing? I feel like I haven't heard it anywhere else in the world except on your podcast, which I gotta say is a little surprising considering the sheer number of Star Trek podcasts that exist in the world, but none of them like yours. Can't wait to hear what you guys cover next. I'll be watching along as always. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I think that's a really good question. I'm kind of it's taken a while for somebody to actually ask that question. Not that I was expecting somebody to, but
so every week you're like, well, you didn't ask this week. I think I put it in there.
These Dan and Jesse are always like, dude, calm down, Patrick. I know they didn't ask this week.
It's the only reason I put it in there so someone would ask me what it was.
So yeah,
that was like first season, right?
We have used that clip since episode one of It's Got Star Trek. So if you go back, even though we've changed our intro over the years, that clip has remained a consistent component. And Jesse, yes, it is a behind the scenes thing. It was a series of recordings that I found. I believe it was at TrekCore. It was at TrekCore. I believe it was at TrekCore.com. I don't think it's there anymore. I tried to find them. But they were a series of recordings from recording sessions, from the actual like TOS soundtrack recording sessions with the studio orchestra. And there were a number of these. Some of them were full clips, but always with the title and the take announced beforehand by that same guy. Some of them were broke apart and, you know, that they had to reset. So it was sort of outtakes and stuff. Let me just play the whole thing so you can hear the original version.
Star Trek 57 M23 take two.
That's it. That's what. Oh, Jesus Christ. What the fuck? Oh my God. What is that? Is that like a Breen screaming?
No, that's when they do slow motion. When Burnham is narrating and they do slow motion and then Rainer goes, no!
Oh, yeah. That was fun. All right. Okay, so that gets through all of our emails and voicemails and all that other stuff. By the way, on that sound clip, I was looking around to see if I could find another source for it. I don't know. I couldn't tell you which episode that was from or what when it was recorded. I think it was 1966, though. I believe it was around that time that it was recorded. But I'll keep looking. If I get more information or if I can find that, you know, something about that, I will mention that on the podcast or, I don't know, social media or something like that. Anyway, thanks again, Jesse. Anyone else who would like to send in an email, you can do so at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com or send in a voicemail at itsgotstartrek.com/record or just send in an MP3 or whatever you like.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for your communiques. Is that how you say it?
You could say it like that if you want to.
If you like. It was a little bit plaintive. Thank you for your communique.
Because I was venturing into words I wasn't sure about.
No, a communique is a communication.
Thank you for interacting with us. You're the reason we do what we do.
Yeah. All right. Episode.
What's next?
At long last, episode.
It's over 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
This was a long opening.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
I don't know.
It's kind of standard.
People listen or not listen. What are they going to do? You know.
Skip past.
Yeah.
Or leave in a huff.
Blah, 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 blah.
I'll be like, I'm so mad about this.
We're one of those fast talking podcasts, though. So it's funny when people are like, I listen to your podcast at 2x speed. And it's like, well, how the hell do you.
God, that would drive me insane.
Especially when we're doing a fast talking Burnham segment. Did we have any fast talking Burnham this week?
We do.
All right, cool. I'm excited.
All right.
Let's go for it.
Let's do it.
Seriously, Dan, let's do it. Okay. Let's fucking do it.
Fast talking.
If you can hear me, I made it through the portal.
Someone needs your femoral vein. I'm on my way to secure it now.
I know what it's like to lose somebody who means everything to you. I've seen the future that's ahead for all of us if we don't protect that power.
But I am picking up an energy signature. It has to be where the progenitor's technology is. Readings don't make sense either.
Whatever this place is doing to my space-time, can it be stopped?
We need to get this back to the Federation before we try to use it. Maybe that's how the progenitor seeded life throughout the galaxy.
That is a good one.
Fast-talking Burnham.
There were some really good ones in there.
Yeah, yeah. I got so excited that I hit one of them so hard that my iPad almost fell over. Some fast-talking Burnham right there.
Fast-talking Burnham. Hard-poking Dan.
Yeah, hard-poking. I was poking hard.
Hard-poking.
Yeah, that's what we used to call you in high school.
Yep.
He radiated to death.
Okay. Yes, the series finale. It's a momentous thing. We probably have delayed getting into the meat of it because it's sort of depressing to get to the end of another series of Star Trek, and one that I think a lot of people would have enjoyed see go at least maybe one more season in this format, as they sort of, you know, I mean, I've enjoyed Discovery all five seasons, but I do think that this was a pretty rocking season. You know, a few minor critiques aside.
Yeah.
And this episode is all the way through is fucking visually mind blowing.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff visually going on.
There, I do get a little frustrated with some of the spinny business. There's a couple things, a couple fight scene things that I'm just find a little aggravating because it's so fast, and I don't like losing my geographic position
right
in this in when watching a fight scene or something like that.
Well, there was also like the whole gravity battle wasn't really well explained exactly what was going on with that whole built structure altogether.
You mean my notes? I said Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, right.
Right?
That is kind of like...
It's like playing Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, and that station was just some kind of
station!
Like...
Station!
That was some kind of like a...
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
That station was just some kind of gateway system that was that was not made by the progenitors.
Not made by the progenitors. That's the new lore. Did you list that in your lore notes?
It speaks for itself.
Dan's lore notes?
But what was the progenitor's tech was that weird circle field, but that part wasn't. There was a lot of like stuff going. There was a lot of like we.
Well, it wasn't clear. I thought maybe all of it was somebody else's tech, and then the progenitors were the people who stumbled into it. Like they found it.
Yeah, but then I think they
Then
they used it, but I thought they actually made that circle place. But the
you mean the portal?
Well, there was no
the circle place. Oh, the interface.
The interface. Because before that's when Burnham was like, "We're on the progenitor's tech right now," but they weren't on it before when they were in that like gateway.
Yes.
Place. And I don't understand how you're supposed to navigate through that gateway. I guess it was now. Okay, so you're in this gateway system, and you're looking, and you're seeing spots of different worlds around the universe. I gather something like that.
Yeah, it looks cool.
And it looks cool, and you go into it. Now, I'm guessing that if you go into it, one would think you wouldn't be able to look back out, but Burnham was able to look back out because
the gates were like two-way gates.
They were two-way gates, and she was jumping. Was it the hurricane winds that pushed her back up in? So that was like a little. That was kind of lucky for her,
did
right?
You think that? No, well, she asked.
That was pretty awful.
She was like, "Tell me when the gust is going to come."
Yeah, but she's lucky a gust came at all.
Yeah, I think
like she landed in a gust place.
That might have been, you know, there were a couple little things here. They were really like, I don't know about that. But I did enjoy overall the bouncing around Super Mario Galaxy style.
It was fun. It just didn't make a ton of sense.
No,
but it was fun.
Didn't make really any sense at all. But
it was fun.
But you can always argue one thing that's fun about sci-fi, especially when you kind of push it to like when they're trying to be all like, this is extra weird sci-fi. You can be like, oh, we don't understand how it works because, you know. That's super advanced.
And that's kind of what they did with a lot of this episode with like the progenitor's tech wasn't actually like there was a part they didn't create. Okay, so I guess that what I'm gathering is that there was a ton of life before the progenitors, but the progenitors were the first kind of humanoid sentient life. Whatever sentience comes to mean, but like that's basically all the progenitors
Especially if we are recalling what happened in the TNG episode The Chase,
right,
which is that's where the progenitors explicitly state,
right,
our culture evolved, we became spacefaring, we go flying around in space, and it was very lonely, because what we found, you know, plants and shit, but nobody like us.
Right.
So then they, you know, did their little project. And I guess what we're learning here is that, yes, that's maybe what happened, but the reason they were able to seed life was because they stumbled across this technology and were able to figure out how to use it.
Which it was more like... It was a step up from cloning. It wasn't really recreating life as it sort of implied that it would be, because they were talking about how you could bring someone back to life, mm-hmm. but it really was just a clone of that person, because it didn't have their memories or anything like that. It was just genetically identical.
But they also said you could design life. I mean, you can do whatever you want. It was just that Maul's specific purpose that she was looking for, mm-hmm. and I am very glad that they didn't do the whole, like, bringing Locke back to life, or it was just straight up like, no, you can't do that. Yeah, the presenter was like, she was being all like, kind of like you're with a child explaining that he's like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, right.
You're so stupid. You can't do that.
You're so stupid.
And they didn't.
I've been waiting for you.
There was nothing about like trying to bring back Quajon or anything like that, because mm-hmm. I know that was suggested by some folks. That was an interesting addition to the lore. But, since I've just learned it, I haven't, like, it hasn't settled in me yet whether I think it's an improvement and is interesting, or if it's just sort of like, okay, the gag here is that there's an endless repetition cycle going back forever of the same kind of thing. Because that was they didn't state that outright, but they sort of suggested
it. At one point, Burnham, though, says, nothing in nature is truly infinite. First of all, like, that's possibly very likely, but that's no means that we established any such rule that there's nothing truly infinite. I mean, there's still theories that the universe is infinite, even though some people would suggest that that's impossible. I would tend to believe that there's nothing really infinite, but I don't have anything to really base that off of. So I don't know if I was a little confused when she said that.
Well, Dan, she's got like 1,000 years of technology on you and scientific research.
Yeah, she does.
So she
studied like the Vulcan shit.
So, yeah.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then
she knows all the Vulcan science.
But It kind of rendered Maul and Locke's characters like not very effectual at all in the whole thing. Because Maul ended up, I figured she would end up not being a villain, but the only reason she wasn't a villain is because her plans just kind of failed.
Yeah.
And she didn't earn it, really. She didn't really grow as a character. Yeah. She's not like suddenly learned that to be good now. She kept consistently throughout the season fucking over the people that were trying to help her. Yeah. Yeah. And at the end,
she bashed a guy's head in.
She's a space rat.
She bashed a Breen, like space the Breen rat. She ordered in, she bashed his head.
Yeah, I didn't understand that either, why there was like, why. So she had a cut on her leg from the Breen.
Yeah, because she got in a fight with the
Breen.
Yeah,
but like they were supposed to be on the same side.
Well, the cut could, I don't know if it was from, because it could have been from one of those flying rocks or whatever, if she fell into the same thing. Anyway, let's take a break, and then when we come back, we can continue to talk about the episode and a little bit the season. All right, we'll be right back.
Take a break, Dan.
Okay, take a break time.
Breaking time.
Cheers, Krabby.
Krabby Beans. Be right back. All right, we're back.
We pose no threat.
We pose no threat at all.
It's only
to your ears.
Burnham says to Maul, she said, boop, someone nicked your femoral vein. And then Maul says, yeah, well, I bashed his helmet in, so fair trade, I guess.
There you go.
So, like, there you go. She couldn't even get along with her own crew.
Yeah.
She can't really get along with anybody. But she set herself up to be great leader. There was going to be some kind of great thing at the end. And it was this like extended fist fight thing, but it wasn't anything really to do with the Breen at that point. So I don't really know. I guess their characters were just there to sort of push along, like to give them a carrot at the end of the rope or whatever.
They're very light. When you extend back into the season, across the season, my main critique of this plot line has been that a lot of the Locke and Maul stuff is confusing or doesn't quite make any sense, or why are they worried that she's going to get to the thing before them when she doesn't have the information they there's a lot of confusing stuff that continued in this episode. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Again, it's not like they used Maul as a tool to move the rest of the plot forward, and it gave us all these opportunities to have some really cool character development with the characters we actually care about, mm-hmm. which is nice. It would be an added bonus if the antagonist for the season was a little bit more interesting and engaging than mm-hmm. I think Maul turned out to be.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end, the only reason we assume she's good now is because like Kovic is intrigued by her and like is going to start
some Section 31 business whatever.
That infinity signal, the symbol thing that Burnham had and that Maul now has, I guess that's just a secret comm badge.
Yeah, he gave that to her in the very first episode. Yeah. I guess the Red Director, the first episode of the season.
So it turned out like they couldn't do anything with the tech to help Locke, and then they threw this stuff back into, which was an interesting choice they made to throw it back in, because the whole thing was sort of set up like, okay, Spoiler alert for Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Did you see?
You have chosen wisely.
Yes. Yes.
Did you get it too?
No, but
I have faith that you will choose wisely.
Yes, exactly.
I got that one.
Because remember when we watched Red Directive, I played the Indiana Jones music because I was like, that's what this season's going to be like. And it was in a lot of ways.
It was
searching out the artifacts.
So, and actually, it was kind of similar. It was similar in that, so Indiana Jones, once again, spoiler for the end of Indiana Jones.
Only the penitent man may pass.
He goes and he finds the Holy Grail to find this like old like crusader guard kind of guy who's been there for forever. Yeah. And so like, and the guard's like, hey, you want to take over this shitty, boring job? And like Indiana Jones is like, eh.
Yeah.
And then he goes away and they never end up getting the Grail. Okay.
Yeah.
Same thing sort of happens here where Burnham gets offered to be the steward.
Yes.
You will become its steward.
Steward. Steward. You remember Mad TV? Steward.
I can't even do it anymore. Steward. Steward. It's not like.
Let me do it. Stop. Let me do it. Oh, Stuart.
All right.
Anyway.
back to our regularly scheduled discussion of the series finale of Star Trek Discovery.
And Grudge.
So in this one, you know, Burnham got found the place, and the progenitor was like, I got this really boring job of sitting around guarding this dumb thing, and then now we want to give it to you. And she set it up like, she really set it up like it was gonna happen.
Yeah.
She's like, it was like kind of like, here you are, you made it, this is your thing, you're gonna be the new one. It's like, she's gonna be the new person to do it, and then she's just like, nah, and she throws it away. Now I kind of get why they did that, because it's the same reason why Stamets didn't get to leave his legacy. It was this idea that you're supposed to, life itself, the name of the thing.
Life, itself
should be enough to be happy with, basically. I think that was the message, is just living is all that really matters. And I love this, one of my favorite lines was from Adira when they said, when Stamets was all sad, and then Adira was like, I mean, you learned a lot, right? Maybe that's enough. I mean, that's all you can really control anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
That was actually one of my favorite lines.
I agree.
Because that whole idea, it's like, it's all you can control. You learn some shit. Like, you can't expect more.
Jesse, was that one of your favorite lines, or did you have a different favorite line?
I don't really have any favorite lines.
How about this one?
Engineering, find a way for Booker not to get irradiated to death.
Yeah, I know, the irradiated.
Irradiated to death.
Email.
Irradiated.
E-Baum's world.
There's no way I'm letting the Breen anywhere near it. The Breen anywhere near it. The Breen anywhere near it. The Breen anywhere near it.
That's a good one.
Interface. It's an interface. Interface.
So Stamets didn't get his legacy. Another sort of dangling sort of thing that was done like that on purpose was with Culber. Mm-hmm. Culber's because Book was like, I thought you couldn't remember any Janal's memories. It's like, I couldn't, but for now I did.
I found the Culber storyline. We discussed this before, that the Culber storyline, this sort of spirituality storyline, it was an interesting, but it wasn't clear if it was going anywhere, where it was going, and now we know it was going nowhere.
It was going nowhere. Because
I know the point. They're trying to say the point is, which I agree with, because it's the same point that, like you said, Adira was making to Stamets, basically the same point, saying you don't need to necessarily know all the answers to have a satisfactory life, right?
Right.
I like that message. The problem is, It made no sense in this episode. He's like, I don't know why I know this stuff, and I helped out. It came across as a bit Deus Ex Machina, which is, again, it's fine. It's just it's not that interesting.
No, because
it's a plot line that would have been great in one episode, like as the C story to one episode. This would have worked really well.
Because he just like knew some kind of the subspace frequency or whatever or something, and like he finally is like, oh yeah, I remember Janal's stuff for now, and he goes,
that one thing.
He straight up says, I don't know why. It's a mystery. Yeah. And like, it's just, it's like, okay.
That's
it's
not
like,
an interesting philosophical mystery to me.
Right, I know. You could say that the writers acknowledged that there was no answer, but acknowledging it isn't enough. It's like, it just didn't, the effect of like, sort of like, embracing the mystery and the unknown, it wasn't conveyed that well through what they did
there.
And I think I think it could have been, but I don't know how they would have done it, but that wasn't very effective for me either. Yeah. I don't know. And the whole thing, like, I'm still sort of mixed on them throwing the tech away. I mean,
I dug that because that was a Star Trek ending. That's like the Star Trek, that's the philosophy of being able to willingly and even enthusiastically give up power because it's the right thing to do. Because knowing that even if you think you're virtuous, that's not good enough. As well as the point that Burnham made, which again, I thought was a very Star Trek ending, was that the technology wasn't necessary because we already had...
They already did it. They already used the thing.
Exactly. They already had so much diversity in the universe. And Burnham gives that little monologue saying, like, this is, we don't need it. This is great. We already have what they were looking for, that what they used the technology for. So it's really only can be used for some bad stuff. Kind of like the Genesis device in some ways. It's a universal scale Genesis device in that Genesis can create life, but it can also just destroy it, right?
You can't do that on Nintendo.
No. But yeah, can you do the jingle?
Genesis does 16-bit. You can't do this on Nintendo. Genesis does blast processing. You can't do this on Nintendo. Genesis does. Genesis does. Genesis does. Genesis does. Genesis does.
Thank you. I just it you know, once I hear it, the bit of it, I got to hear the whole thing. Otherwise, I feel sort of there's like empty hole inside.
Right. You need closure. It's like you got a tick.
It's like a horrible itch.
Yeah. No. And I agree with that. It's just kind of interesting that, like, it's like the whole season was focused around getting to it. And then I guess the thing is Burnham learned a lot along the way. And the point is she learned enough to know that she didn't need it anymore. But it was kind of a bummer because you could tell that the progenitor wanted her to take it. Yeah. You know. So.
Well, this is not a new story. This is a fairly well-worn story. I know, Dan, last week you were talking about there's certain story archetypes, you know, that we go back to, but there's also new stories that emerge. And this season-long arc of questing for an object that you then lose, whether willingly or semi-willingly, like you noted in Last Crusade, they would have liked to keep the Grail in the Last Crusade, but he chose wisely.
Yeah.
He chose saving his dad or whatever instead of, like, you know,
It was his Nazi girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
Wasn't she a Nazi in that movie?
Yes, yes.
But he saved her because she's a perk.
Well, then she ran to try to get the Grail and she died.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
But he saved her, I thought.
Everybody's seen
that. No, she tries to get, doesn't, I think she falls.
Oh, no, you're right. It was his dad he saved. Yeah.
He saves his dad in the
end. Because his dad, he goes like, Junior, just let it go.
Junior. We named the dog Indiana. Steward. Okay.
Wait. Hey, speaking of Junior, just let it go.
Oh, no.
We need to let it go.
Yes.
Burnham said that about... Yeah. That was another parallel with Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade. Because he goes, Junior, just let it go.
Yeah.
Or however you say it.
Pretty good. I'm impressed.
Thanks.
I keep saying people love that on podcasts.
Hologram.
All right, so
what I was saying,
cool ending, but you were still like, you want the power, is what you're saying?
Not necessarily. No, but I liked it. I enjoyed the episode.
You're like, let's play with it a little bit and then destroy it. Maybe just make a couple things.
I just felt so bummed out for Stamets.
They just make a new kind of deer, like a new kind of future deer. Maybe that's what. Maybe that's where that deer, that colorful, hilarious deer came from.
Yeah, that was amazing.
It was cute. Anyway, we'll talk about that epilogue later.
No. It was, I liked it. It's just, it took me a second to sort of, like, get used to that.
Well, because we're humans and because I had the same instinct of being like, oh, man.
Yeah, but I know that.
I want to use the technology.
But once again, that is the point they were making, is that, you know.
I want to manipulate nature to my desires.
No one person can handle all this, and life should be good.
And no one culture.
Life should be good enough on its own. That was the whole point with the Stamets and all that stuff. And Burnham, okay, back to when Burnham apparently, like, learned all this shit along the way to make the right decision at the end, which was to not take it at all. At one point, she says, like, I've seen the future that's ahead for all of us if we don't protect that power. When did she?
Oh, don't you remember when it was in the time flipping episode?
The time flipping?
Yeah, it was that episode with the spider, with the time spider.
Oh yeah, we did see a future where everything was all fucked up, didn't we?
Yeah, it was in Face the Strange.
Oh, Face the Strange.
And they pop ahead and see the Breen destroying everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because they got the ultimate power.
Okay, how did she know that those?
Somebody's app.
When Maul saw those,
the strange blip, place for a pile of rocks.
Those rocks, and Burnham was immediately like,
it's a monument.
It's a monument for a scientist who tried to do it and died. How'd she know all that?
Well, because they told her. Junal mentioned that one of the scientists died while attempting to use the device.
So she was assuming that that was a monument, though. She didn't know for certain.
No, she didn't know for certain, but.
She's a xenoanthropologist.
She's a xenoanthropologist with the information she has available.
She knows Karens when she sees them.
It's a fairly. Did she say Karens or Karens?
Karen.
Karen.
I didn't say Karen.
They would have found it. They wouldn't have found it, Karen. Yes, they would have. They would have found it. What'd you do, Karen? I had a question for the episode where they went to the Mindscape.
The question's for the episode? Or is it for like me and Jesse?
For you guys, for whoever, about the Mindscape episode.
What makes you think that we have answers?
I don't know, but I'd at least like to present it. So when Burnham was in the Mindscape, Avatar Book told her that she would be killed as a failsafe if she fucks up the thing. How is that a failsafe? Is that a failsafe in preventing the wrong person from getting to the tech? It was weird.
I think that's the idea. Yeah. So you can't like be all like, hey, everyone else give this a try and push the button.
But
and
I think death is kind of a strong punishment for failing it. You could just say, oh, you don't get the thing.
I mean, you're saying that like as if I don't disagree.
I don't know if any of you agree or disagree. Intense. That's why I'm bringing it up as a discussion.
Well, we agree.
Also,
I mean, I agree. I don't want to put words in Jesse's
mouth.
And
also with the Mindscape quest, they should have put a note on Burnham that said, hey, don't try to transport Burnham while she's in the Mindscape because she'll die. Because remember, Culber was like, we can't transport her because she'll die. Yeah. But like... Yeah. Lucky Culber was there to tell him that, because what if somebody tried to transport her and possibly killed the one person that could have run the progenitor tech? You know what I mean? Like, it's like they should have.
Do you know what he means, Jesse?
They should have warned someone that.
I think I know what he means.
They should have warned someone that transporting someone while in a Mindscape is bad. How are they supposed to know that? Lucky Culber was there. That's all I got to say.
Indeed, that's a good observation about a few episodes back.
I'm glad I could help.
In this episode, when they're jumping through all those portals, they go to like Purple Land.
Purple Land.
Purple Land was pretty cool.
Is that where like they are later at the end?
Later at the end, they're at that one of those. If you remember back to the third and fourth season, where Book talks about those sanctuaries.
Oh right.
Because like Book's whole deal is his culture was all about hunting animals, and he was like
always.
He was like, I dig like being nice to the animals, so they created these sanctuaries, and so they're living.
Yes,
I think they call it Sanctuary 4, where they got the big worm creatures and the crazy deer creatures.
The trance worms,
Molly the trance worm.
Those look like trance worms at the end.
At the end, they were swimming.
Those were trance worms.
Those were them worms.
Molly was in there,
dude.
Her babies.
He planted that forever tree. That's probably an invasive species on whatever planet they were on.
Well, that planet was for.
Was that supposed to repopulate?
It was a quote-unquote sanctuary, because like that was pre Quajon blowing up, if I recall correctly. He was protecting all these animals by they were like putting them on these different planets.
Where do you think the wedding was held? Was that on Kaminar? Certainly wasn't Vulcan.
Probably not Vulcan. Yeah, maybe Kaminar. Although Vulcan has some bodies of water.
I thought it was all fiery everywhere.
But they went to Fireland in the portals.
Yeah. Did you see
Fireland?
Wait, when you said Purple Land, did you mean like the extra saturated foliage land? Is that what you're talking about?
It was all purple.
Yeah, right.
Hence the name.
And the pyrotechnics land where there was
super
like
crazy like Duhastmik, you know, like a Rammstein land.
There was like some very very obvious like
just guys standing with squirting the fire.
Those fires. Squirting guns. Like later when Burnham finds out about Maul's pattern buffer, remember, because Burnham was like, what's that pattern buffer there? And Burnham thought, I thought this was awesome when Burnham was like, it's Locke, and Maul was like, if there were weapons I would have used them. And that me introduced like something I hadn't thought of before, which makes perfect sense. If you can keep a human in or a creature in a pattern buffer indefinitely, you could store all your weapons in a pattern buffer. How video game characters can carry so much shit, is they have like little portable pattern buffers.
Yeah, that's what Link has in Zelda.
Yeah, he's got a pattern buffer.
He's got a pattern buffer.
That's how he carries all that shit.
And a transporter.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. But anyway, right after that...
Mary Poppins got similar shit.
Yeah, exactly. In Roger Rabbit, they had portable holes. They were a little different.
Well, that was a portable wormhole.
Yeah,
right? but you do have the Doctor Who. They got that TARDIS.
I heard
bigger on the inside than on the outside, just like this little portal business.
And that's what Flight of the Navigator. That ship looked bigger on the inside. I remember. I don't know if it actually was.
Flight of the Navigator had all sorts of stuff.
It was a cool ship.
All sorts of stuff going on in there.
Really amazing.
Really amazing indeed.
And in that same scene when Burnham says to Maul, she goes, follow me. She said it all weird like that. No, she didn't. As they're walking away, you can see out of the corner of a screen, and while they're on that structure, a random fire sploot comes out of the corner of the screen. And it's like, where did that fire come from? And why is it shooting out like somebody blew a fire...
There was like a jet of flame that would erupt on the bridge from time to time. What the fuck was that? Why didn't somebody fix it?
I noticed that too.
It's a decorative feature.
So it was Pyrotechnic Land, the Rainy Rock Land where they found the Breen Brains. Yes. Breen Brains. Burnham's lucky she didn't get
Breen Brains.
Well, it was a lot of, there was a, she had to fight the Breen guy and then in hurricane style. Yeah. And then she had to fight Maul multiple times.
Yeah.
And it was just a lot of that kind of fighting. And I was thinking about if this were a similar plot, but in a TNG episode or something, there would have been much less of the actual hand-to-hand combat style. It was like, it went on a long time.
It would have been more like some kind of slow kick, and then they would have done that trick where they grab the wrist and they flip the whole arm around and it causes the person to do a flip in the air and they fall on the ground.
Yeah.
Those kind of, and then they would have done a chop to the back of the neck or something.
The fights were, for me, it was inconsistent because there were parts of the fight that I thought were really fun and interesting. And there were other parts that I was just like, either it was too hectic or some of that slow motion stuff, it didn't quite engage me. It was a little like, okay, it's the flying. It looks cool.
Did you like when they spun around and then it's faded to the Starfleet space station? I can't remember if that was the beginning or the end where you see they go go into spore drive mode and it starts, you see a behind the shot of, I think it's Discovery, the screen starts spinning really fast and then it stops spinning and you see Discovery behind the fucking space station. I don't know if you remember that, but you should do that. It was very spinny.
Now I'm not so sure.
I don't remember it, but it sounds like something I ought to remember, so I'll sort of go with pretending that I remember it.
Yeah, wasn't that weird?
It was really great.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was pretty cool. I was pretty into it.
I didn't hate all the spin moves, but there was just a few spin moves that I thought were a little excessive. Some of the fight stuff, a little... Again, it's... I'm reiterating what I've said multiple times before about having a clear understanding of the geography of what's going on. The vast majority of this episode does it exceptionally well. Again, right from the beginning with the black holes, the ships fighting.
When they spore drive the fucking dreadnought away,
that was amazing, that looked so super
cool,
and it was fucked up.
It was like
send them to the fucking galactic barrier.
I know, that was pretty awesome.
That's really far away.
that was pretty cool. I thought that was fun how they separated the shit and surrounded it using quantum entanglement or whatever.
Saucer separation is always fun. I'm sure they'll mention that on Unplanned Trek. The saucer separation stuff was rad. And also just the way they set that up was charming. I like when they do this application of humor inserted into the otherwise tense moments,
right?
It's the season and series finale. You never know what's going to happen, but we're rooting for our heroes. And then they have Tilly do her whole, it's like, Rainer's like, could we jump something else? And Tilly has that, do you have that quote, Dan, of Tilly being all like, no, 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 no.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Absolutely, absolutely not.
That was it, wasn't it?
No, and then she said maybe.
Oh, let me try that again.
Yes,
try it again, Dan.
Because you turned it off right before she says maybe?
I didn't turn it off, I split the sound out.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no. No, 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 absolutely, absolutely not. Maybe.
Yeah, thank you for reconstructing that.
No.
Because for me, the maybe punchline is good. And then they don't rest on their laurels.
Maybe.
They move on to Stamets, and he does the same joke again.
Oh, yeah, he did do the same joke
again. He did the same joke again, Dan. Do you have this one?
No.
No way. It's impossible.
And then I don't have the rest, which was a little...
He was like, unless...
Unless, in theory...
Kind of did like a Columbo type thing.
Yeah. But I like he goes,
no way. It's impossible.
No way. So, yes. So Stamets and Adira, they're once again sort of move the plot or move the sort of solve certain.
Yeah.
Plot.
They're a little bit, but it's impactful.
So,
bit.
Yeah. But okay. So, okay. Here's this part. Book needed to fix the shuttle to go so they could go into,
radiation protection, which they needed as one of them Simon Says games. You know the Simon, that game Simon?
Yeah.
That's what they used to
protect. Oh, did they?
Yeah, Jesse, right? You get what I'm saying. Jesse's nodding his head.
I know.
It's a podcast, Jesse.
I
it is an audio format.
I know.
He's still just nodding his head.
I know.
He can beep.
I know the Simon game. I just didn't notice it. But like, so we've...
The little device they give them to protect against radiation. So, it looked like a Simon.
So here's the thing. Like we found out just now that the shuttle can't handle radiation. We didn't know that before.
No. It's not that it can't handle radiation. It can't handle the massive amount of radiation.
No, that's what I meant. It can't handle the radiation
outside. Yeah.
That amount of radiation. Right, that's what I meant.
I'm just clarifying so we don't get those nasty emails.
So, okay. So we find that out just now that we didn't know that, but we find out just now. So they invent this problem and then they solve it immediately by going to Stamets so he can solve the issue for it. And they don't really talk about it again. They never mention like the radiation issue. So it doesn't come back. The only reason I can think they brought it up was to sort of add tension in general, but specifically tension for Culber, because Culber's like, I'm going to go too. And that's when Stamets starts freaking out. And so I think the only reason they talked about the radiation thing being a problem is so Stamets could be worried about Culber to try to up the tension somehow. But the problem is they never sort of brought that thing back.
They do bring it back up, but it's very sort of implied and oblique. When they're in the shuttle, the computer... is talking about like, oh, we've only got like 5% of shields left, radiation, whatever, and Book like turns it off because he's like, I don't want to hear it. He's just like, I'm just gonna turn off the fucking warning.
Yeah, but like they say you got an hour, maybe an hour, and it's like that means nothing to us. It was not really brought up in a way that sort of upped any tension for me.
It's exposition to increase the tension that could not be conveyed
tension.
Visually. Even though most of the visual stuff was conveyed so far. Fucking well.
Yeah, it was. I didn't really get how that final riddle did anything to sort of test the trueness of one's heart. It was just a little puzzle.
It totally wasn't to test the heart. It was just like exactly.
It's like,
it
so
puzzle.
if you
like, get the puzzle right.
If your brain is too slow, you can't take control of this.
So here's
thing.
The thing. I thought this plot resolved very well. I really enjoyed how everything worked out. And a great capper to the season. And I think...
Capper. Hey, capper.
Sad that it is the series finale, but this story I thought was a great way to end out the series. It worked out well. The timing worked out well. However, that being said, there are a couple things here that are really a little bit ridiculous. And one of them is that, you know, not a big deal, but it's like, okay, it's not like something particularly special. It's like, okay, the negative space. Okay, I get it. It's fun. It's nice. All right.
And then Maul builds it wrong and causes, you know,
I'm not going to be too mad at that, even though. Immediately when you saw the triangles, I'm not particularly bright, but I immediately was like, oh, you have to build it so the blank part is the triangle. That's what makes sense. From the clue. Yeah. It's just like super obvious.
I cannot explain what I'm looking at right now.
The thing that was a little bit more aggravating to me was it wasn't Tilly's plan. I was about to say Tilly's plan, but it wasn't Tilly's plan to use the crazy gas explosion thing to blow up all the little ships.
Oh, the plasma?
Right.
When he was like,
set a course for the plasma.
Yeah. There was nothing wrong with Tilly's plan. I thought Tilly's plan was a good plan. I didn't like when, because like Tilly was all like, wait, maybe we can use the plasma. And then the other person, I forget her name, was like, that's genius.
Yeah.
It's like,
right.
No, that is not genius. That's like a super old trick in the book. You know, you have the people go through the boat, go through the oil slick and set it on fire.
Right.
Or you have the car go through this and set it on fire. Yeah. You know, this is a common thing where you get the horde of zombies into the room and then turn on the gas and then blow up the house. Like, that's nothing new. And there's nothing particularly interesting about it. And it's almost insulting to the Breen that they would be so stupid as Do they have sensors? Why they're just like, oh, maybe, let's fly into the gas cloud.
Yeah, maybe they'd never, they didn't know that plasma blew up so easily or something, which they did.
But yeah, I just, I was, it momentarily took me out of the show when the lieutenant was all like, that's genius! Yeah,
that was a little...
it's like, it's not fucking genius. It's just, it's a sensible, reasonable plan to execute at this particular moment.
The progenitors went extinct billions of years ago.
Billions of
But when the progenitor was talking to Burnham, that was only from Burnham's perspective. From that progenitor's perspective, they were still alive, right? That's kind of like...
I don't know, because she's talking about her mind, and is like, is it a computer program? Like,
seems
I,
like a more like...
Well,
a
I think it was one of those things where they're like, we're not going to give you enough information to actually come to any conclusion. We're just going to have a bunch of fans fight about it for the next 20 years.
So, right, this was the line. It said, my species went extinct billions of years ago, but our minds, yours and mine, are here in this liminal space-time adjacent to my own, which would imply that that other progenitor, that the progenitor was still alive from their perspective, but from Burnham's perspective, it was the future. Like, there was, it was like, there was like two time periods like squished next to each other,
yeah,
for some reason,
totally,
or something. But yeah, you know, also I was wondering though if it was supposed to be a computer program or something like that too, but it seemed to imply that they were talking from different perspective, time perspectives. Speaking of
time, we'll never know.
Speaking of time perspectives, this is kind of jumping ahead. Do we want to talk about like the thing about Kraft, the whole Kraft tie-in?
Yes, but let's do that in the next bit. And fact, hey, the timing is good because it's about time to take another break.
Oh, really?
Okay, you guys are not as excited about that as I am.
Last time, then.
Sometimes it's really fun to take a break.
Yeah.
All right, are you guys ready to take a break?
It's just a crazy idea.
All right, it's not that crazy, so we do it every week. All right, we will take a break now, and then when we return, we will conclude our discussion of the... season/series finale
right now
of Star Trek Discovery. Be right back.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, we're back. We've returned.
Oh,
I got an echo over here.
Hey, got an echo over here. An echo over here.
An echo over here. Oh, it's an echo over there.
I know I'm a doctor, not a physicist, but...
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah,
doctor. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
One of many references to previous incarnations of Star Trek.
Before I forget, I wanted to bring up the back to the gate station, the Grand Central Gate Station. Mm-hmm. Burnham kind of stumbles into the technology. Like, she says, like, look, there's a shadow on this one, and then she put her hand like ninth dimensionally through the thing to like to travel. She was thinking ninth dimensionally. That's Marty McFly always had a problem thinking fourth dimension.
Marty, right, made it.
But that gate station was huge, as we established already. How was she able to like end up right next to the tech where she needed to be? Did she just use her mind to like summon it to her?
Again, it's a weird sci-fi place. Just because it's big doesn't mean you can't get to where you need to be.
Like
through
right,
any little,
like lickety
little
split.
Pocket dimension. Yeah, lickety split.
Like you could just like go zip zap and like pull open a portal to like another
zip
part
zap
of
lickety split lickety split. Just
it
like
was,
you said,
it was an extra dimensional sort of structure.
Well, you know, she still had access to the ship's computer somehow. She was talking to it. The computer couldn't do that,
or at least
much.
her built-in little
there was a tricorder thing.
Hollow tricorder.
So maybe she could still use a little personal transporter thing.
Well, but Book was talking to her through his thing too.
Once he got close.
At one point there was an issue with the black hole becoming out of bounds because the gateway was powered
slurping up the energy.
Now was it slurping up the energy because Maul started the thing? Because
yes,
that was what was causing it. Was
the
Maul.
Implication from the progenitor person was that the machine was turned on and getting ready to do its thing. And it was basically booting up, and the way it boots up is by slurping power from a nearby singularity.
Well, okay, so I guess that means that
slurpity
Romulan style.
They should have opened that gateway. Okay, why would this thing be designed to suck from an energy source that
suck?
Okay.
Suck. Do you know what movie that's from?
Yeah, I do. Well, but then
does the audience know?
Oh, Jesus, come on, man.
All right. That's okay. You're right. I apologize. She's gone from suck to blow. Spaceballs. It's Spaceballs.
Oh,
all right. Sorry.
Oh.
Good.
Why would they design something to suck energy from the black hole if sucking energy from the black hole was going to cause the black hole to lose mass and then fuck up gravity for everything around it?
It could be.
Wouldn't it suck itself into the black hole?
I don't know, because I kind of got the impression that little portal thing could kind of do whatever the fuck it wanted.
Right, but I guess it's the implication is once you go in there, make sure there's nothing else around there because like it starts sucking everybody in. Burnham goes, she goes to the progenitor. She goes, yes, Maul, the person that I came with, she used the interface. She activated something. It's altering gravity in my space-time. Now, it wasn't really altering gravity. It was just fucking with a black hole. That's not the same thing as altering gravity.
I think this is a case of them trying to simplify and efficiently convey the idea that by changing the distribution of mass in the local region, that the orbital calculations of the black holes and all the ships and stuff was going to get all like weird because, you know, that's not a normal thing to happen, is to have that much mass shift so quickly.
I would say it's more accurate to say their gravity fight was the altered gravity situation because they were just flip-flopping all,
weren't altering gravity. It was just the weird bizarre place.
The gravity was altered. Gravity was joining extra dimensionally with each other. In this
but it was
way.
Conveniently Earth-like gravity in all of the places.
Right? They had perfect atmospheres, all that good stuff.
That's why it's funny when, you know, again, as we always say on the It's Got Star Trek podcast, it is the right of every Star Trek fan to be as nitpicky or silly as they want about ridiculous things, but we must remind ourselves that this is a quote-unquote sci-fi show where every place has really Earth-like gravity and air and all that other stuff.
Ta-da!
And light waves and all that, you know, anyway. The sound's so nice, Dan played it twice.
That's right.
Interface.
In your face.
Okay, before we get to that epilogue and also the behind the scenes stuff around the epilogue, a couple other things.
Behind the scenes?
So the thing to know is that the main story, this episode ends after Saru and Tarina's wedding.
Saruman! Suck! 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 She went from suck to blow! Suck! Oh, fuck!
I think Dan is realizing, comically realizing, that with his Saruman thing, he has the same tick that I do with the Spaceball stuff. We're all the same. That's the lesson we learned, right, Dan, from this episode?
That
we're all ultimately the same.
Life itself.
I offer certainty.
We'll talk about that, too. But so this episode ends when Burnham and Book are talking on the beach, and then they beam away to go on their adventure. And then they added the epilogue. And we'll talk about that in more detail in just a moment.
When did Saru become admiral? I was trying to say Saru become admiral, but then I started saying Saru become I said Aruman, like Saruman. When did Saru become Aruman?
Ambassador.
I thought they said Admiral Saruman.
No, he's ambassador.
No, I think they said Admiral.
Ambassador.
I don't think
they said Admiral Burnham in the epilogue.
Definitely Admiral Burnham.
But welcome back, Admiral Burnham. Yes. Admiral Vance. Aye, Admiral. Sorry to interrupt, Admiral. Admiral, Madam President, congratulations. I'll talk to the Admiral and the President.
Yeah.
But you are as cowardly as our Admiral believed you to be. The crew of Discovery is family to us both, Club. Admiral.
Yes.
Maybe they didn't say that.
No, but if you look up Ambassador, you will see that they refer to him as Ambassador.
Ambassador Saru.
Mr. Word keyword search, motherfucker.
Comm channel's open. Ambassador Saru, you got 2 minutes to get Tahal Scout in the vicinity of... I thought they said Admiral.
This was a really great way to give Saru one final kick-ass moment. He's had so many kick-ass moments from the beginning of the series.
Turn your fleet around.
And Doug Jones just did such a wonderful job.
Oh, he was really great in the facing off at T'Hall.
It was
definitely
perfect.
Look into my eyes
and
tell me if you see even the slightest glimmer of doubt.
Yes, it was so great. And it was also a culmination of all the character growth over all five seasons.
Wait, this part?
And I am Kelpian. First my species are.
Wait, let me try that again.
Suck.
I am Kelpian. First and foremost, my species are predators.
Yes.
Yeah.
Predators. They have sensors because they are predators.
Yeah, and that's such.
They can shoot those spikes at you.
And that's such a polar opposite of what he was at the beginning of the series.
Yes, and that character growth being so efficiently encapsulated, made for a really great series of moments in this episode.
And I've studied you like prey.
And, you know, the wedding was cute. I enjoyed the wedding. The costumes were great. It was, again, this episode was all about happy endings, really. And they were able to show us, or at least indicate a path towards happy endings for all of our characters, or most of them. We got to see Detmer and Owoshikun again, finally.
Yeah, really.
The actors had scheduling conflicts, which prevented them. Yeah, so was one of the things.
Do you think
that
Book really ran into Talaxian pirates, or do you think he was just joshing?
Oh, I'm sure he did. Why not?
Yeah. But Burnham wasn't at all concerned. She was like, eh.
Would you be concerned if you ran into some fucking Talaxian pirates?
Space creeps.
You only have to be concerned if they're trying to feed you lunch. Or trying to sleep with your children.
I thought it was kind of uncomfortable how Tilly compared her relationship with Adira to Burnham's with Rainer. Because if I was Rainer, I'd be like, motherfucker, like, I am the senior officer to Burnham. Well,
that's,
like,
that's the joke.
Yeah,
right?
I know that is the joke, right? It is true.
Cute.
I guess that, yeah, it was the point, but I'd still be.
He had good character development over the season, too. And Rainer's a great example of introducing a character that is immediately compelling, has a really understandable and well thought out character arc that interfaces with our existing characters. That's what
they did not quite manage
with Maul.
In your face.
I mean, Locke was great.
But yeah, Rainer even referenced when they were in Kamau at the beginning.
Yes.
And that he changed.
And the whole avalanche
thing. And he realized that, like, sometimes you got to scrap your plans and just.
Which he learned from Burnham. Now, it's a little silly that a seasoned officer would have to learn that lesson so late in his life. But.
And it wasn't so much that you have to learn to improvise, it was more that you have to learn to let go of. Another sort of example of letting go, whether it's the progenitor's tech, your Stamets's legacy, or like letting go of whatever like plan you have your mind set on at the moment,
or the fact that people are mean to you because you can make ice and snow. You know, you have to let it go. You don't. All right. I suppose you guys are unfamiliar with this.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Are you talking about because we got no place to go? Let it snow. Let it snow.
No. You're close. No, it's the letters from the motion picture hit Frozen.
I never saw that.
You should. It was pretty good. Frozen solid. Frozen 2 is even better.
Frozen solid.
So Frozen 1 is just, it's an entertaining film. And then it made a lot of money. And then so Disney was like, we're going to do one of our first mainline sequels ever. And they did Frozen 2. And apparently they told the director, like, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Because they did a bunch of crazy shit in Frozen 2. It's wild. Wild shit.
Crazy.
Was there not to be excited about?
Okay. Last few things before we get to the epilogue.
I wanted to say at the very last scene on the beach, before they went to the future land, which you could tell that they were going to future land when they cut there. You could be look at that and be like, that's going to be old Burnham. But anyway, but on the last.
You could tell. Dan is very proud of himself.
You know what else I was proud? Oh, this is actually a side note.
He's going to hold that previous. He had a previous thought. But he really wanted to get out. He's going to hold that thought, and he's going to tell you something different.
I'm pissed, and I'm proud and pissed because I forgot to mention I had it in my notes.
Okay.
That they remember that how Kovich had that old pad of paper a couple episodes back, and he was like, "This isn't replicated. This is the real deal." In my head, I'm like, "Wouldn't that have like sort of like fallen apart and dissolved in a thousand years?"
Yeah,
I was thinking the only way he could have done that is if he traveled through time.
Yes.
Boom.
Boom!
Boom!
He's Agent Daniels.
There you go.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, Agent Daniels.
I do want to talk about Agent Daniels, but I don't want to lose that previous point you teased us all with. You teased us with this, I presume it's going to be some sort of brilliant insight.
No, it's not an insight. It was just like the scene with Burnham and Book at the end.
You remember that? It was cool, yeah.
With the beach. No, it just, it was like a really solid feel-good moment.
It was wonderful.
It was great. And it made my life seem kind of grindy and sad a little bit.
you're like, look at these few beautiful, happy people. Yeah, my life is miserable.
This is a happily ever after thing.
It is,
and I was buying into it, too. They look so happy, you know?
Oh, no. It really made me, but
it was just like, why can't like?
And again, like I was saying about Rainer, it's because it was believable. It was a believable culmination of the situations that they've lived through, all the circumstances that they've had to work through, everything that they've navigated together comes together in a believable and meaningful way. And then, of course, you have two actors who certainly appear here to really sincerely enjoy working with each other. And that came through. And you can see how that would be a great end to the episode. The episode could end right there.
Ta-da.
We've already learned about Daniels, which is a cool reveal. Got to see Geordi's visor, Sisko's
agent,
baseball. A reference.
Picard's vineyard wine.
Yeah, Picard's
wine.
Gross wine.
His gross wine.
Gross, disgusting wine.
Oh, we learned that there. Have we heard of Ferengi rummy before? Because they mentioned that in this
episode. Think so.
I don't think so.
That was a bit of lore.
Good, funny. Good.
Sounds like a game I don't want to play.
The lore lives. But yes, now we can, I think, move along home to the epilogue. Now, before we discuss the content of the epilogue, I want to discuss the behind the scenes situation. None of this.
Yes, you did.
You do.
None of this is news, particularly, I don't think. But
I've been waiting for you.
So they filmed all of season 5. Season 5 was written, conceived, filmed it all, and it was going to end with Burnham and Book on the beach.
Burnham and Book on the beach. Go, Burnham and Book on the beach. Go, Burnham and Book on the beach. Burnham and Book on the beach. Go.
Beaming away to a mission.
Burnham and Book on the beach. Beaming away.
And then they were going to have, they were planning already for the 6th season. And the 6th season was going to be them. It was going to be a season-long arc getting to the Calypso future.
Stop.
Right?
Really?
That was the plan. Michelle Paradise, the showrunner, she was talking about that.
That's a bummer we didn't get to skip.
Yeah, because that was the plan because, and again, for a lot of folks haven't seen the Calypso short trek, highly recommend. It's one of the better short treks. I like pretty much all the short treks, but Calypso is regularly rated by folks as being one of the most interesting ones, most well done. It was done 6 years ago now, and we did, but at the beginning of the season, before this 5th season started, we actually covered Calypso and a number of the other Discovery related short treks. So go check out that episode of It's Got Star Trek if you want to hear more about Calypso. Go watch it. It's not long. It's really worth it. But anyway, that was their plan. So that was what was going to happen. And then 4 months after they finished filming the 5th season, Paramount Plus came down with the word that they were canceling the show.
Boo.
But that they were going to give them...
Oh, no.
They were going to give them some extra money and extra time on the sets. And they brought Jonathan Frakes back to direct. He's uncredited, but Jonathan Frakes directed this last 15, 16 minutes, this epilogue, I guess you could call it, denouement, that they tagged on. That's sort of a condensation. It's taking what they were thinking of doing in season 6.
Because the climax really happened around the 57 minute mark.
This was artificially tacked on because all of a sudden this was going from a season finale to a series finale. And you can kind of tell that, you know, everyone knows it, but you can also you can see that it's this extra bit. And that's why I think epilogue is an appropriate term for it. But what did you all think? I enjoyed it. I thought, you know, it was interesting. Some people are saying it's a little bit of a forced connecting it to Calypso, I liked the opportunity of seeing a little bit more.
I liked seeing it. It was a little bit confusing because we didn't get the season, we don't get to find out, how do they know something's going to happen? Is it Kovich travels to the future to, find out that
the mission is from Kovich is the implication.
Now that brings a question about time travel. Can we travel forward in time and backward in time? Or is Kovich from, the mega future?
We can definitely travel forward in time.
Isn't Kovich...
No, Kovich is from the previous
century. He's from the
31st. This is the 32nd century.
So he can travel forward in time.
Yeah, because Daniels, as we know from Enterprise, from the beginning of Enterprise
from
31st century.
It just adds a lot of questions. Why did he bother going in the future to find out that they needed to do this? You know, how did somebody from the extra future come back to Kovich?
Well, the thing that they're leaving out
was Kovich was a time agent.
It was a temporal Cold War.
Was there a future time agent that came back to talk to Kovich and was like, hey,
no.
Some future shit?
No. Kovich probably just knows from his bouncing around.
But what I'm saying is it brings the question to my mind. Why did he bounce to the future? That's what I'm saying.
And do you remember what one of the primary points of this episode in this season was? That sometimes
Sometimes there's no answer.
You don't know the answer. You don't know the answer. You're supposed to be happy.
No, but like, no, you asked me what
You're fucking with us, Dan. The producers are saying, shut the fuck up, Star Trek fans. No, look, you don't get an answer to these questions.
Patrick, you asked me what I thought of it. And what saying, what I thought of it was I liked it, but the problem with not having a full season is we don't get to answer these questions. Yeah. Like, why would they go to the future?
Well, I think one thing that they don't mention explicitly, probably because they thought it might confuse people who haven't been watching the whole series, is... remember that Discovery has that sphere data. Remember that sphere business? And it has this, like, the sphere that has the collected knowledge of over a billion years that got integrated into Discovery.
Look, and I know
that's what created Zora. And then Zora won't let the Discovery be destroyed. Remember, there's that whole plot line that so they can't destroy this Discovery to destroy the sphere data to protect other people. So presumably, my understanding, my guess is that they're hiding Discovery to protect that sphere data because they can't destroy Discovery, but they can hide it. And that's what's happening here. But they don't tell us that because I guess there was no elegant way to convey that information.
And I know that you can travel to the future in Star Trek because that's precisely what Discovery did. But I'm just wondering if that's a casual thing that the time...
Kovich, when we first meet him, he explains that the temporal cold wars are over and that time travel has become banned as a way to stop the temporal cold war.
Right.
And that Discovery is actually in trouble because they've time traveled. They're like, well, we didn't know about the fucking law.
Right. So which brings even more a question in my head as to why they traveled to the future to make sure that this thing would work out. Because how did they know that there was going to be this craft guy?
Culber and Adira are going to wave their fingers at you and say, like, Dan, just be satisfied.
Yeah, right.
Just be fucking alive. Right. Be happy that you're alive.
There's no answer. They're trying to make me feel guilty for wanting an answer.
I know, right?
But yeah, I liked it. It was a little bit bittersweet because it's like Zora was like, I don't know how I feel about this waiting around thing. And then it just reminds me of, oh, great, great. And the episode was kind of bittersweet. So, like, great for Kraft, but it was kind of shitty for Zora. Yeah.
So there's this has been an interesting discussion over the past day or so on the internet where I think, by and large, this series finale was very well received, just like it has been here on this podcast. But a lot of people were like, that's fucked up to send Zora being out to be alone for 1,000 years.
I know, it is pretty fucked up.
Other people are like, well, it's a noble thing. Zora is effectively a part of Starfleet. She's taking orders.
Well, hopefully she has computer brain where time can pass by and it doesn't seem as long to her for some reason.
But when you watch Calypso, it does seem like she's been sort of going fucking nuts for a long time. We don't even know how long at that point.
But I mean... And I guess at the end, so I guess it was just Burnham was the only one on this mission. It was her and Zora.
It can't have been the case because they talked about the crew leaving and again, there's all these questions that you can totally you can brain cannon it that obviously it's not just Burnham flying by herself, but who knows?
But
it's further in the future. They have extra super duper automation. Why not?
Yeah, and it shows that scene with her and the rest of the crew, which is also a nice feel good moment with that whole crew. And and we know that because she goes like
so many memories.
So that sort of says that this was not really happening, that they were just her memories. And when I say, at first I was wondering, is this really the whole crew getting back together again? And the reason they're showing them as young as a sort of a stylistic choice,
it's because they were reusing footage from other things because they only brought back Book and Burnham for this reshoot, essentially. And then they hired a person to play their son.
Right. So that's what I was wondering, is if that was meant to tell us that yes, the original crew is back together with Burnham, and their original crew
she was just remembering. Yeah, that was just memories.
Well, at first, I thought it was that, and that they just didn't want to shell out the money for the actors and the extra makeup, and that's why they showed it.
Because age makeup was really fucking good.
But when she said so many memories, that sort of solidified it that it was just a memory. Yeah. But it didn't show the rest of the crew. I don't know what. I guess they probably got some youngins doing the crew thing. I don't know.
It was cool to see how much the Federation had been rebuilt by this future time period in the epilogue, and they really accentuated that as Discovery was leaving Space Dock and jumping away and had all those shuttles and all tons and tons and tons of ships.
It's just also sad that they really never, the Spore Drive never really got, they truly, put it out to
pasture,
that's what I'm saying. I had some just notes about the future time part.
Are these musical notes or no, they're sort just, of clever
just,
little
just, they're just little they're just little
can you do that sound again, Jesse? This is Jesse's new feature.
So
gibberish Jesse
those are notes.
The deer thing is so cute.
I knew, just like I knew when they showed that scene and the future scene.
I knew it.
I knew before we saw Burnham. I just like I said, I knew that was going to be future Burnham. I was like, that's going to be future Burnham. Yeah. I was totally right. Yeah, I also, you also had to.
Anytime you have like a cozy, like woodland place, like Shatner, like Kirk in the Nexus, you're I guess that's
except,
not future.
Except but. Like Picard's Nexus. Childland was kind of frightening and weird.
Yeah, well, as we learned in Picard, Picard's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
He has all sorts of fucked up brain stuff.
I also knew as soon as I saw Burnham's son, I was like, that's Burnham's son.
Yeah.
And then, but they did the thing where they wait for him to say, hello, mom, as if it's going to be a sprite. But he totally knew that
was
Burnham's
son. Who else is it
going to
be?
Yeah. She was so excited and she had that sort of like motherly excitement that actually, like, if they had done something like, had it not be her son, it would have been like, why the fuck are you like acting like this?
Yeah. Yes, you did.
I couldn't help but think about how Grudge is dead by now. In the future.
Not unless Book keeps Grudge in suspended animation on his fucking shirt collar on his wrist.
It might be
on his sleeve.
The pattern buffer for Locke was green. Green Eye had a green pattern buffer.
Yeah.
Anyway, like Borg were green too. A lot of green going on.
Yeah. Vulcan blood is green.
Yeah, a lot of green.
Due to the copper.
Breen glood was bleen.
Breen.
We got treated to more saturated foliage in this outside. Yeah. It was a cool house they looked at. She still has a Kovach badge. Book makes a really good-looking, distinguished old man.
I thought the old age makeup, I was like, they've come so fucking far.
Yeah, they have.
And not only is the old age makeup just really sophisticated, but I'm also glad that we're now in an era where instead of just sort of like, it's a bunch of white old people and just make them all like old and white and wrinkly. It's
baggy and saggy and wrinkly.
It's sort of like culture, race specific aging up, which I thought was it was just really, really nicely done.
There was this part.
The Jaxara bees.
Yes. Like that was confusing. I think that what was supposed to happen is it was supposed to float on top for the whole time. And I guess through
the honey like leaks out, the melts honey out like, from the steam or something.
Yeah, or some kind of like through some kind of osmosis or something. Osmosis. Or maybe it was some magical honey that did magical things, but I wasn't sure. Like it sank in there, and
don't put honey in your coffee.
And we weren't supposed, like, we were supposed to gather from that sinking into it was bad.
Because then the wax melts, and then you get waxy coffee.
But like, it makes me wonder, how are you supposed to keep that from sinking? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
That wasn't Book's fault. Maybe he didn't make the foam.
I think he didn't make the coffee properly.
Yeah, he didn't make the foam thing enough. There was Alice, the psychedelic reindeer thing.
Yeah,
that was pretty. It didn't exactly look realistic. I wasn't buying into it being a realistic looking thing, but
you still wanted to hug it.
Yeah, it was still cute. Yeah. It was nice to look at.
I'm glad there was a fence and that it was on the other side. That's all I have to say.
You wouldn't want to come across Alice?
I don't think so.
Dude, Jesse wants to hunt it and eat it.
What's wrong with Alice?
It's me or her, man.
Kovach could have taken them all back to their original timeline of discoveries if he wanted to.
Maybe, but time travel is illegal.
Yeah, that's right. I thought it was in the future when they were going to the space station. You saw all those dots sparking around. I thought they were cute and adorable.
They were very cute.
I like how they're. I like when they're fixing things. There's all these sparks going.
Discovery like introduced and expanded greatly on this whole dot culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty fun.
I like when things are sparking things as they're fixing. It's all sparking.
That's cool.
Book turned the world root into a world tree.
Is that it?
That's pretty much.
Are you good?
That's
pretty much it.
You got it all out.
No more discovery.
So some of the stuff we already talked about, which is why I didn't repeat some of
it. Well, thank you. I mean,
I could have if you wanted to.
No, I really don't.
Damn.
No, we're good. We have to get out all the pieces of information. We've done that. We've done our bit. Now we can close down the show.
Well, there's
Jesse, any last points? Dan, any last points? Patrick, any last points?
There was a not really that's an order scene. It's not really.
I was wondering if you would bring up the not really that's an order scene.
Yeah. Were you really? Or
No, I was, because I was like, this is not really a that's an order scene, but like Dan might want to bring it up anyway.
So Vance goes, Admiral Vance goes, I cannot in good conscience offer my Okay. Vance says, I cannot in good conscience order my officer to take you on this mission. And then Commander Nan goes, doesn't have to be an order, sir. I volunteer.
Yeah.
I think that's perfectly fine. It's not even that's an order.
Yeah, it's not even.
But she was even like, but she
qualify for your
no
for your usual.
But she was saying
extra close attention.
But she was straight up saying though, don't say that's an order. That's what she was saying there. So she was actually...
No, no, she was saying don't say it's not an order.
She's saying, say, don't... She was saying don't say...
Don't not say that's an order.
She was saying don't say...
You can't fire me, I quit.
She was saying don't
but the,
say...
But the opposite.
Don't say the word...
She did the opposite of that.
She said don't say the words that's an order.
All right.
Okay, then I have a duty or no duty.
Okay, duty or no duty.
I have actually a couple of them.
Oh, no. All right,
here's,
let's go.
Here's one. You're going to get mad at me for this one.
All right.
It is my duty to share instructions on how to operate this technology.
Of course. Why do we play this?
I think that's a no duty.
Absolutely.
It's a no duty.
Okay, here's another
no
one.
No diggity.
There's two more. After one, then one more. Makes two.
Some in devotion to duty.
Again,
no duty.
Okay, listen.
No duty.
This one I might have to play a couple times, so listen carefully.
Something to look forward to, folks.
Okay, duty or no duty. Pay attention.
Study it. We need to understand it.
This is not about your legacy, Commander.
I didn't say mine.
See the look on Vance's face.
You have
tell
a duty.
Him that.
I understand.
Stop.
Here's I'd say that's a duty. I think, to me, that's pretty I clearly duty. A duty. Play it again, I think that's a duty.
I'll play the shorter version.
Face. You have tell a him duty. That. I understand.
Stop. And then here's it isolated.
We have a tell duty. We have a tell duty. We have a tell duty.
It sounds like she's got to take a duty.
We have a tell duty. We have a tell duty. We have a duty.
Is that Stamets?
That was Rainer in the background.
Is Rainer?
I would say that.
No, it's Stamets saying that it's a duty.
Oh yeah, that's Stamets. But yeah, that was definitely a duty.
Yeah, Rainer's in the front.
Stamets
in the back.
That was a duty moment. Yeah, the lines as they go, Stamets says, we need to understand it. And then Saru goes, this is not, I almost said Saruman again. Saru goes, this is not about your legacy, Commander. I like that line. I like how Saru was like bringing the hammer down. And Stamets goes, I didn't say mine. I like that too, because Stamets, they're having a little spat right there. Yeah. That was pretty realistic. I've been in those kinds of arguments at work before.
Don't you work at home by yourself?
You work at Starfleet. Well,
is Dan's goleming in the mirror.
I'm talking to my cats.
But nobody likes you.
When I worked in restaurants, and Rainer at that part when Stamets goes, we have a duty. At the same time, Rainer is saying, I'd give anything to see the look on Vance's face when you tell him that. When he said, he's like, we have a duty. We said it's
duty or no duty.
Yeah, anyway.
Duty or no duty. That's it. That's all she wrote for Star Trek Discovery.
And everyone was like super pissed about throwing the tech away, except Saru, who was just like, whatever.
I think he got what Burnham was putting out there.
He picked up what she was putting down.
Yeah. All right, but that's the Star Trek Discovery. Now, we have full coverage of Star Trek Discovery from seasons 3, 4, and 5 now. We started the podcast after seasons 1 and 2, so we hadn't covered those. We've covered a few episodes in those. The first 3 episodes of the first season, we did magic to make a sane man go silly. Maybe we'll get to do some more coverage of those first 2 seasons of Discovery at some point. Maybe we'll do it as a Patreon thing. I don't know. Write in, let us know if you'd like to hear our thoughts on those first and second season. We can add to our collection there and eventually
totally
finish that up.
They only said Clue 5 times this episode.
But
they said it like 20 times.
You do want to reach out to us, you can get us a feedback at discussstartrek.com. If you would like to go to our website, which I recommend for a variety of reasons, you can go to www.itscottstartrek.com.
Hey, quick question. How do you guys pronounce this word? S-E-N-T-I-E-N-T.
S-E-N-T-I-E-N-T. Sentience?
Sentience.
Well, it's sentient.
Sentient.
Yeah, I say sentient too.
I say sentient too. I'm just being silly.
A lot of people say sentient.
Yeah, and a lot of people use it potentially in the wrong way. They often are saying sentient or sentient when they mean sapient. Mm-hmm. But that's a discussion for another day.
But the progenitor pronounced it sentient, so we got to believe the progenitor.
It's got sentience.
That's also a discussion for another day. So in the meantime, you can find us all over social media at It's Got Star Trek.
In the meantime.
It's got sapiens.
At It's Got Star Trek.
Sabotage.
And we're on Facebook and YouTube and all that other good stuff. Find us out there. Tell your friends.
And a lot
rate
of the bad
and review.
Stuff,
we don't
I'm
often,
not jokingly.
We don't often ask for it, but it is honestly very helpful if you are able to rate or provide a review for us.
Evidence!
We're not going to read it.
Preferred podcasting platform. Jesse might not read it, but Dan and I will, and we'll be all like.
Oh, good.
And it is helpful to drive your friends to our programming. You can also just tell your friends and send them.
Oh, no.
But otherwise,
oh, no.
Hope you enjoy that. Next week, we will be discussing TNG's The Royale.
Not with cheese.
Not with cheese, just regular old The Royale. I think that's going to be a fun one. Hope you come and join us again next week for that. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Let's fly.
That was good. I really like that let's fly at the end.
All right. Pretty good.
See y'all later. Bye-bye.
Say we disable all of the safeguards, all of them, on the spore drive. Could we jump something that's not discovery?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Absolutely, absolutely not. Maybe.